comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. We are here because you have a right to know and because you matter. The Alchemy Event 2011 draws nigh. It's November the 11th through the 13th. You still have time to register. You still have time to get your tickets. Don't count on getting tickets at the door. You may be able to, but you can't count on that. You can click the banner, the Alchemy Event banner on my website. It will take you right over to their website. You can see all the speakers and all the topics. It's going to be really an important, significant event, and you want to be a part of it. Now, some of you are going, alchemy, I don't know about alchemy. I don't want to learn about alchemy. It's not about alchemy. You didn't listen to the show, did you? See, if you listened to the show every night, you would have heard the organizer of the Alchemy Event when he was here on the show talking about how that term is being used metaphorically to talk about the fusion of various types of information, UFOs, extraterrestrials, government cover-ups, consciousness, how it all relates together. That's what this is about. And so there are going to be some fantastic speakers at the Alchemy Event. You want to be sure you get in on it. If you can't be there, it's going to be in Los Angeles. If you can't be there personally, physically, you can enjoy the Alchemy Event via live streaming. But you have to register for that as well, okay? So get over there and register. You still have a little bit of time. Tonight is Watch Free again here at the Kevin Smith Show because last night we had something really weird happen. I don't know that it's really weird. Electronics are machines, although they do their thing electronically instead of with moving parts. And about an hour into the show, our internet went dead. Wasn't anything we did, and it wasn't anything the guests did. It just happened. And it took about 20 minutes for them to get it back on. So I don't want you to miss out. You know, we do Watch Free a couple of times each month. I don't want you to miss out on that. So you can watch free tonight at the Kevin Smith Show. All you have to do is get over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Click on that great big link that says Watch Free Tonight. That'll do it for you. Also, if you're not a member of our members community here, you don't get to watch the show every night. You have to wait for those Watch Free nights to come up. But if you're a member, you get to watch every night. And so, plus you get into our archives, you get all kinds of goodies, forums, chat, your own friends page, your own blog page, your own photo album, your own video album, lots and lots and lots of goodies. And it's only $7.50 a month. Now, come on, folks, that's 25 cents a day, and we give you the first 7 days free right now, but you need to hurry because that's coming to a close, that 7 days free. It is a limited-time offer. So you need to go ahead and join while you can get in on that, and then you will be able to watch the show every night live. And if you happen to miss the live show, it gets loaded up onto the website so you can catch it for the next 24 hours. How about that? Pretty cool, huh? All right, we're going to step away for a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a lot of things, but focused on 2012. We'll be back right after this. All right, Right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. You know, here on this show, we look at all kinds of information, and we look at it from all kinds of perspectives. That's the important thing. The important thing, I don't have an agenda where I'm trying to get you to believe something. I'm not trying, I don't come on this show and try to drive something into your mind so that you go away as a disciple of Kevin. All right? Not interested in that. I am a talk show host, and I think that just presenting the information is important enough, because then you can think about it, you can ask questions about it. It exposes you to different perspectives. But since we don't have an agenda, that means that when we talk about a subject, we try to bring guests who have different perspectives on that same thing. And one of the big, big things that's of great concern to many, many people right now around the world is 2012. I've brought people on the show who have the NASA view, you know, which is, it's all nonsense. I've brought people on the show who have a sort of more Mayan perspective of 2012, the Zechariah Sitchin perspective of 2012, the Marshall Masters perspective of 2012, and then you've heard the Kevin Smith perspective of 2012. Which one is right? Well, nobody can know for sure. They may all have a piece of it right. Tonight, we're going to take a look at 2012 from a whole different perspective, a more Vedic perspective. You've heard me talk about the Mahabharata, and you've heard me read from that some immensely interesting passages having to do with extraterrestrials and flying craft, and we've delved into that. Well, we have someone with us tonight who really is in the know on these kinds of things. His name is Bhaktaswami. He was born in India and grew up there, earned an engineering MBA, and went to work in a government position there, moved over to software and programming, and then came to the United States as a software consultant. He also worked for several major corporations as a programmer and formed his own software consulting business. And then something happened. Quite unexpectedly, he had a vision, and after that, he changed paths. Bhaktaswami, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Nityanandam. I would like to greet everybody. Nityanandam. Briefly, Nityananda means be eternally blissful.
Be eternally blissful. That's a good greeting.
That's eternally continuous. See, good evening is a good evening, and then we'll see. Good day is good day, and tomorrow we'll rewrite the contract. But be eternally blissful is the wish. That's my experience, and I wish the same for you. That's how we wish.
Well, yeah. That's an excellent greeting. Now, I talked with you before the show, and so this is not something that will surprise you. I want people to sort of get into the groove of understanding you and who you are and what you're about. And most of our audience is, the great majority of our audience would be in the Western, what we call the Western world. And they don't normally see someone wearing orange robes, although they have seen it. They don't see it every day, and they may not understand what that's all about and what you're all about. Okay. Having talked with you, I know that you're, quite a very normal person, but you dress in a way that the corporate world doesn't. So let's talk about that for just a second. What's the orange robe about? Is that traditional, or is that, does that have some religious significance? What is that?
Kevin, it's interesting you say I don't look normal. that's interesting.
No, I'm not saying you don't look normal. I'm saying you don't dress like the corporate world.
Yeah. Since I'm from, I have had a fair amount of exposure to corporate world, I understand what you say. But in India, there are 10 million people who wear this all the time. They are called sannyasis or sadhus. So the importance of what it means is that the saffron typically means sacrifice and putting yourself available for people. It's the most appealing color according to the statistics, according to the scientific study also. Even the color themes on the internet these days are more towards the saffron and shades of them. And by the way, if you look at the diffraction of light, the white light, the sunlight diffracting into seven colors, you will see VibGR, the red or the saffron edge is the least diffracted. So it can be seen from far. It is, even the red light on the traffic lights is on the top. So people could see it. And so they get to stop. So in those days, the sannyasis the monks are supposed to be traveling in the forest. And so the animals would sight them and keep a safe distance. Nobody needs to come in each other's way. And for all these reasons, that was the color chosen. And so it is regarded as a symbol of asceticism and awakened state and consciousness. And it does bring a certain calm. Even the color therapy says this color gives the maximum results as far as peace and tranquility is concerned. So there are various scientific as well as social as well as spiritual reasons why this color is. And if you want a joke, I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Okay, so this is how I try to explain to the kids. Look how a sannyasi does. What is a sannyasi? He's supposed to not own much, minimal. And the white clothes are what is easy and cheapest. And they wear that and they keep traveling from place to place. So they are dusty, so they become saffron.
Well,
I tell you, it is something that helps to identify as a brand. Plus, it has the spiritual components. There are various shades of it, but basically, it is something to do with the spiritual standing. Basically, it's a branding.
Okay, fair enough. And now let's talk about what religion it represents.
The saffron color, it itself does not represent any religion,
mm-hmm.
but it represents that. See, there are, in the East, the four parts of your life. The first part is where you are a child and you are a student, vidyarthi. Then the second part is you are a grihastha, you are doing the productive work, householder, the worldly world work. And living a normal human, productive, contributing societal life. Then the third part is called Vanaprastha, where you are slowly fading into a spiritual area, but not completely there. Then the fourth part is Sannyas. So those who take the Sannyas are typically known to be wearing these clothes. And they are supposed to be people who have taken the vow of poverty and a few other vows, which help them to inspire, lead, as you said. You said you don't take sides, right? You are impartial. So you are giving space to different ideas and thoughts and expressions here, mm-hmm. on this video. Just like that, the person who is wearing saffron is supposed to have no motives. And his only motive is to raise the consciousness of people. Sacrifice and give space for people, help them to raise their consciousness.
All right. Now, tell us a little bit about what you're plugged into. I mean, are you plugged into a religion, or is it a philosophy? What are we talking about? What do you represent?
So thank you. That's important for me to express. Me as an individual has no purpose except to radiate the consciousness of an enlightened master. And I have been fortunate, as you briefly explained in the beginning of this while introducing me, you were kind enough to tell me that, you know, tell about me. I had a vision. I would like to elaborate on that.
Okay.
There is a enlightened master. His name is Nityananda, Swami Nityananda. He is born in South India and he's only 34 years old. And he barely spoke English about 10 years back. But right now, he is the most watched guru on the internet. He is the most followed spiritual leader of our times. And he has got over 2,000 videos that are on the internet. They are on the YouTube under the channel Life Bliss Foundation. Every day there are about 10,000 people watching him. And there are over 12 million channel hits. So he is rearing away, giving the spiritual wisdom. And one day, it so happened that I was in Santa Barbara. I was a consultant. I had this beautiful vision in which he said, "Wake up. How long are you going to sleep? Wake up." And then I woke up and it was a great, different state of mind. And I was unable to continue my work, but I was not dazed or sick, but in a different frame of mind. I was drawn to asking around and finding out. To my surprise, I found that there is a master. He is coming to town in Fremont. So I was given directions. I went and met him. It was an exhilarating moment. And I had very tough questions. I had a very nice meeting. At the end of that, I felt I'm going to follow him. So he represents the Eastern philosophy. He represents the essence of Eastern philosophy, which I would call the Vedic culture. It is not a religion. It's a way of life. It's an understanding. It's the oldest culture, oldest form of spirituality that's followed. It's the mother of all spiritual leadings. So there are scriptures. There are also these masters who help us to bring those down. Is there any question, Kevin? You okay?
Yeah. Among those Vedic writings, I know I will not pronounce it correctly, but there is something that a lot of people in the West are now familiar with, the Mahabharata.
Okay. I will pronounce it for you.
Okay.
Mahabharata.
Mahabharata.
Maha means great. Bharata means person who is looking in. Bharatiya is one who looks in. Bharat is also other name, the original name for India. India is like, you know, the western name of that land, but actually it's called Bharat. Bharat means one who looks in, not out, but look in. That's the first step to spirituality, according to the Eastern philosophy. Mahabharata is a great epic of the one who looks in.
And what we're familiar with from that is several things. One thing is the descriptions of these fantastic flying machines. I think they're pronounced Vimana.
Yes.
Also, a description of what, if you did not know that this came from some ancient writing and someone just put it in front of you and asked you to read it, and you read it, and then they said, "Well, what is that?" You would say, "That is a thermal nuclear explosion."
Yes. Kevin, it's so interesting. Anything and everything that you could possibly point out from the modern technology has already been documented, has been explained, and has been used in the Vedic culture, including your sophisticated brain surgery, including, as you say, the UFOs or astro travel, including, you know, the nuclear explosion, which we call nuclear explosion, which is called Brahmastra in the Vedic culture. All of those things were documented and they were told in so many stories. So what Swamiji does, what attracted me, see, I'm an engineer, I'm an MBA, I'm an executive with 25 years of experience in corporate world. How am I attracted to someone who was almost semi-literate, who could barely speak English about 7-8 years back? Because he brings down this knowledge which is written in the language called Sanskrit that all of us know, and he brings it down in bite-sized components and in a language that you and I follow, that our children can follow, the seniors can follow, the housewives can follow, the business executives can follow. And he brings it in small fables and stories, etc., so that we all can understand and use it in our life. His aim being drawing us to awakening of the consciousness. Slowly, steadily, he takes us to a different state and helps us to live better. So that's what attracted me. So that's what I follow. I follow Nityananda. Nityananda is a fruit of the Vedic culture, the Eastern philosophy. And I am a blessing. I have his blessings to be enjoying those fruits, so much so that I wanted to spread it. I wanted to be part of his mission. So last 7 years, what I'm doing is being part of his mission. And every other description of me is not much meaningful, except that I enjoy his teachings, I live his teachings, and I radiate those teachings so that people get inspired to follow the same. And in the process, we have many organizations. We have a worldwide organization. We have our presence in over 100 countries. And as I was briefly telling you, there was a webinar last Saturday. He holds webinars, and he holds, by the way, every day evening he holds these satsangs, discourses. Right now there's one going on. It is free, and it is aired free on our website. I can give the detail in a little bit. And people watch from many, many countries. Thousands of people watch all over. So I have been drawn, and that's what I help people to connect to. And today, over the rest of the time, I am going to help our audience understand what his views are on the 2012.
Very, very good. All right, so let me ask you this. We're about a minute away from having a break, but let me ask you, this extremely advanced Vedic culture, what yes. happened? What happened? Where did it go?
It did not go anywhere. It just got less important because of the westernization, the invasion. That's the Bharat is the one land. India is the one land which every civilization has invaded. And they have had influences of multitudinal dimensions. The most damaging being trying to inculcate the Western culture of materialism instead of the Eastern philosophy of inner world. So that has become a little bit of subdued and less important, and therefore the need for an enlightened master like Buddha, like Jesus, like Krishna, like Rama. Enlightened masters happen once in a while to reawaken the world, cleanse the dirt, and rekindle the views towards the inner world.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll pick up right there, though, when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, Bhakta Swami, and we'll be back right after this.
Show, also known as the world's hottest talk show host.
And welcome. I keep forgetting to push that button, and then we get feedback. Sorry about that. Okay, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are talking this evening with Bhakta Swami, and we are talking, we've talked about where he's coming from, sort of philosophically, and kind of getting a feel for who he is and what his philosophy, where his philosophies stem from. They stem from Vedic culture, and as I said, we're going to sort of focus on how that applies to 2012. Before we get into that, I want to explain to you why we're taking a look at it from another perspective. The perspective, well, why another perspective first? Because, ladies and gentlemen, we are like blind men. And we come across a philosophy that explains part of something to us. we come across some teaching somewhere that explains part of something to us, we have a natural tendency to think that's the whole thing. But it isn't the whole thing. You know, we run a spot here where we say if 16 blind men were given the task of describing this animal, and it on video it shows you a rhinoceros, each one could only explain what he could touch. He can't see the whole. He can touch parts. So he would begin to explain the part and describe the part he's touching. So we would have 16 different descriptions, each one absolutely certain he had faithfully described for you that animal. Who's right? Each one partially. All of them are correct when we put them together. So that's why we look at different perspectives. And, you know, 2012 is something that a lot of you have sent me a lot of email about. Now, some of you get shy because of my views on 2012. You get shy and you say, well, there's no use me explaining my views or expressing my views because he's already got his views. Well, that's called freedom. Freedom is okay, you know. Go back to those thrilling days of yesteryear when we all used to think free. Freedom is okay. Different doesn't mean wrong. Different doesn't mean wrong. You have your views, I have mine, someone else has their views, and when we put all these perspectives together, we can sort of begin to see the whole. One of the things left out of all of the discussions on 2012, folks, not just on my show, but on all the shows, is the view of one of the oldest, perhaps the oldest, culture on the planet, the Vedic culture. And it's the Vedic culture that provided us with, and I know I will say it wrong, the Mahabharata. And it has the most incredible, amazing descriptions of high technology from thousands of years ago. It doesn't make sense to me that we should leave out 2012 from the Vedic culture view. Does it make sense to you to leave that out? It makes no sense to me. So that's why we have asked Bhakta Swami to be here and to help us to see 2012 from that perspective. Bhakta Swami, there's a lot of fear. I get a lot of email from people who are really fearful about 2012. They really think something cataclysmic, an earth buster, is going to take place. Is that the view from the Vedic culture?
Kevin, absolutely not. Vedic culture is not at all supporting that view. Actually, there was one person who was talking about similar things for 2000, year 2000, the millennial change. He goes on, he went on saying that the world is going to come to an end, the world is coming to an end, the world is coming to an end. You know what happened? On January 2nd, 2000, it was found that he was dead. So the world did come to an end, but for him. So the Vedic view is that the world is going to come to an end for lower consciousness. There is going to be a sudden spurt in consciousness. There's going to be a rise in consciousness.
Why?
I'll explain to you in a little bit of from what Swamiji has said.
Okay.
Nityananda. So he, as I told you, there are so many talks of him on the YouTube, but one that he has delivered last few months ago, and about 2012 specifically. He narrated one of his experience, most relevant experience that he has had. And what happened is he usually has a morning exercise. And because there are lots of people in the ashram, we have our ashram in Bangalore, Bidadi, where a lot of people come from all over the world to participate and to be with the master in his presence. So whenever there is a lot of programs and he can't go out, it's interfering into their person's space and his space. So he is doing something like jogging or something on the treadmill. So when he was doing that, he felt a sudden difference. Normally he can't do yoga, because if he does any yoga postures, he gets into bhava samadhi and he will feel like he's in a huge balloon. He'll start feeling in a different state of mind. I hope you understand what samadhi, that different state of oneness with everything. He falls into that and is difficult. So he doesn't do the asanas, he does the treadmill. So yeah, that day when he was doing the treadmill, suddenly he started experiencing the same thing, the samadhi experience. So many times, the spurts, he was getting into that state again and again and again, more frequently. So he just analyzed what was happening. So this is his finding. I don't know how you take it. You have to understand that this is from a culture which has lasted over 10,000 years, and the people still live that. And so the knowledge is all there in Vedic sciences. I'll tell you a little bit more about it shortly. So he says that the gravitational strength in the force of the earth is reducing little by little. Very small extent, maybe about 6 milligrams, not more than that. This seems to be very insignificant for our body weight and very difficult for us to perceive. But if you percept you feel that. And what component of you is losing that weight? He says, the thoughts. He says, the thoughts have weight too. He says, thoughts have weight and that part is reducing. When thoughts reduce, you get lighter in a different way. You don't get lighter on the scale. You can't see it on the scale, but you will feel different. You will start experiencing different states of mind, higher consciousness. You know the DNA?
Oh, yeah.
There are the two parts in DNA. Mm-hmm. The double helical structure you see, mm-hmm. It is the solid part. And then there is a liquid part around it. The solid part is what we attribute to the form, the color of the skin, to the curve of the hair, to the twist in the smile, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a liquid part which is attributed to your spiritual qualities, your inner qualities, your love, your creativity, the subtler, fine qualities. And the DNA determines, the solid part determines whether you have such and such form or such and such disease, but the subtler part decides how you feel, how you experience, what dimensions of deeper spiritual qualities you experience. So those are the ones that becomes more and more strengthened and apparent. You see, there are sometimes qualities which don't express, the dormant qualities and then the dominant qualities. What is the difference? Why do Mendel's laws affect that way? Why do the dominant and the dormancy happens? It's because of the subtle part, the liquid part, which is called the genome. And now scientists are talking about 12 strands of DNA, not just one, but 12 strands of DNA, not just two, but 12 strands. So he's talking about those deeper dimensions which get awakened. He's saying that by the end of 2012, he's going to have at least 10,000 people levitating in one place.
All right. Does he say anything about what's causing that? Okay, so I understand the gravitational field is weakening, but why? What's causing that?
Not weakening in the sense of weakening, but changing, where the people are getting lighter in their minds. See, the problem, the human mind, the problem is the engraved memories. Those memories cause such heavy thoughts and continuous thoughts, and they cause what is called the depression. Because normally people with large number of thoughts are considered to be active, and people with little bit lesser number of thoughts are considered to be not productive in the traditional cultural thinking. But in the Eastern thinking, as the thoughts go down, your consciousness rises. What is happening in 2012 is certain cosmic alignment which is reducing the pressure on the inner being. Therefore, the things that are, the situations that are, the pressures or the toxic nature of the environment is being slowly removed, and the lightness is happening. When that lightness happens, there will be two types of effects. One type is you start feeling depressed. and you start popping in food into the mouth, or thoughts into the mouth to refill. Those who can understand and stay balanced and centered and learn to be centered will start experiencing deeper dimensions. So it is a cosmic alignment, which is a beautiful happening, which is enabling what is called the Satya Yuga, where people will live more joyously, more happily, more fruitfully, and with greater fulfillment. For that to happen, the cosmic alignment keeps changing in cycles, and it is happening again. The best of the times is around. So that lightness is what is causing this slight change in the weight, which is actually going to reflect in large number of people increasing the consciousness.
Okay, now this cosmic alignment is something that we've heard about from a lot of different cultures and from a lot of different perspectives. Some people interpret that as that it's going to cause some great cataclysms and great darkness, but your interpretation or his interpretation is that it's quite the opposite. It's going to cause great joy. But here's the question.
Right.
This cosmic alignment will not remain. It's something we will transition through. So will these changes for the better remain?
See, this is an opportunity for jumpstart. I have to warn one more thing. When this cosmic alignment changes, when this is a beautiful opportunity. See, I have to tell you one thing. The distance between the sun and the earth is 108 times the diameter of the sun, approx. And the distance between the earth and the moon is approximately again 108 times the diameter of the moon. And 108 has been the number of beads that we wear around our neck. And it's a sacred number that I'm sure all of our audience is very familiar with. It's the number on which most of the spiritual practices, etc., are done. So the Vedic culture already was very familiar with this mathematical balance, even though they were not able to see with the eye. 108 has been the holy number forever. So there is a cosmic balance that automatically takes care of itself. So there is not going to be any physical calamity. However, when this lightness happens, those who fall in tune with the lightness will become sattvic, centered, and balanced and beautiful.
Hold that thought, because a break just took over. When we come back, those who fall into line with the lightness, and keep that in mind, we'll pick up right there. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back. We are talking with Bhakta Swami, and when we went away for break, you had just begun to talk about those who can sort of come into line with this lightness. So let's pick up there and move forward, and I have some more questions about 2012.
Shall I?
Yes.
Okay, Kevin, why don't we hear Swamiji movement? In his own.
Okay, there's something wrong with your audio, because it's breaking up. We're not getting you now.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's still breaking up a little bit.
I'm going to play Swamiji.
It's breaking up so bad we cannot understand you.
How is it now?
That seems to be better. I'll let you know.
Okay. I'm going to play Swamiji's video.
Nah, it's breaking up. Probably if you were about to play some video, some audio or something, that's interfering with your Skype.
Now, relax.
Okay, let's try. Is that better?
That's better.
Okay. You don't need anything to excite you. Feel comfortable with that less thought space. That will get translated itself into more action space. Less thought, more action. Sattva. The peace. Restful awareness. So much of prediction about this 2012. All over the internet. This is going to happen, that is going to happen, that is going to happen. All thinking-based civilizations are predicting doomsday. All being-based civilizations are predicting enlightenment. Actually, both are true. If you are a thought-based person, unable to catch up with the reality of less thoughts, it is going to be doomsday. Heavy depression. And there is going to be huge mass suicide. And all the countries and societies ruled by the depressed people are going to have war with others, blaming others responsible for their suffering. There is going to be huge destruction. Understand, you have the responsibility to become conscious, enlightened, and choose enlightened beings as the head of your civilization and society, country. So, we need urgently few million enlightened beings in all major fields of bureaucracy, politics, in all major fields to protect planet Earth. Understand the urgency. Anyhow.
So, that was what Swamiji was saying.
Okay, so as I understand it then, people who reject the idea of consciousness or reject the idea of raising their consciousness will get more depressed, and there will be very negative things happening as a result of them. And so what happens? As he said, there will be huge destruction. Is he talking about war? Is he talking about some type of natural, geological something that happens? What is he referring to?
So let me clarify, Kevin. Good points. Because I had the benefit of being with him for a long time and several other talks, so let me give the context. The calamities he is talking about are not natural or geological or astronomical. They are all consciousness-based. When there is less number of thoughts, people will start feeling agitated if they are not entrained, if they are not aligned with consciousness. And they need help. And he says, if one person sits and meditates, 1,000 people get the benefit immediately. He says, he holds some classes where he raises Kundalini energy, the innate spiritual energy in the people. So whenever he holds a class several hundred people come, and in a city when he holds it, the crime rate of that city goes down. So all he is asking for is having a large number of people take up meditation, being spiritually awakened and aware, and automatically everything will become peaceful and tranquil. So his message is, urgently take up consciousness as the primary food, not anything else. Take up the most important energy that you need is consciousness right now. So work on that. He's asking, he's giving a call, a clarion call to everyone to be more aware and conscious in all walks of life. He is not life negative. Vedic culture is not life negative. Vedic culture is life positive, and it is full of solutions. It offers solutions. All it's asking is for people to be contemplative, look in, be meditative, reduce the number of thoughts using these yoga and meditation techniques.
I think a lot of people in the Western world, and you're the perfect person to ask this question to, because you're from Asia, and obviously quite in tune with the Vedic culture and the thinking in the Vedic culture. But you also have lived here in the United States, and you have worked in the corporate world, so you know both sort of the Western mindset and the Asian and Vedic mindset. So let me ask it. I think a lot of people in the Western world would say, if you have less thoughts, then you actually become possibly more dangerous because you're acting without thinking. How would you answer that?
See, this is the exact opposite of the truth. And I understand totally. And I really, please don't blame just the Western thought. It is the modern versus the ancient thought.
Okay.
The people, the sages, the seers, the rishis, who are the, we call them the scientists, the saints who are the scientists of the inner world scientists are called the saintists, we call. So those are the people who always went into calmness. Do you ever see Jesus jumping around, running crazy? He is calm, peaceful, and blissful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't come with lots of thoughts. That comes with a reduced number of thoughts. You see how Einstein got his brilliant ideas. You ask any of the, even the Nobel laureates or the great artists where their inspiration comes from. It doesn't come from frenzy. It doesn't come from milieu of large-scale wanton acts. It comes from the middle of silence and aloneness. And reduced number of thoughts is a divine nature. As you reduce the number of thoughts, your clarity increases. Thought is basically, you have to transcend the mind. In the sense, it's not a mindless state, it is a beyond mind state. It's a state in which you are running your mind is not running you. It's like this, Kevin. If you were to sit in your car and you want to go to your studio, but it wants to go to the, you know, the casino. Who is the boss here?
Good point.
It doesn't help, right?
Yeah.
You want to go to the studio, you should be able to tell which turn it has to take and where it has to go. So the mind is now the car, and is it taking you where you want to go, or is it taking you where it wants to go? Just introspect. If people were to just take a few minutes and just see how their thoughts are running, or if they were to introspect and see how they reacted to a certain situation, they would see that their past memories have hijacked their thought trend and their actions.
All right, we have to step away for break. We will be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. More with Bhagyaswami. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. But we're glad you're here now, and we have a very interesting and very special guest with us this evening, Bhagyaswami. Now, if you're just joining us, you may be scratching your head and saying, okay, so what does that have to do with the things the Kevin Smith Show normally talks about? Well, here is what it has to do with the things we talk about. We are talking about 2012 tonight from a different perspective. We have had guests on that have presented the NASA perspective on 2012, the Mayan perspective, the Hopi perspective, the Sitchin perspective, the Marshall Masters perspective, the Kevin Smith perspective. We've looked at 2012 from many, many different angles. But it doesn't make sense to me that we have not looked at it from the perspective of one of the oldest, if not the oldest, cultures on this planet, the Vedic culture. So Bhaktaswami is with us tonight talking about 2012 from that perspective and what's coming in 2012, what we can expect to see in 2012. Now, Bhaktaswami, let me ask you this before we launch into this second hour. You've been talking about Swamiji.
Yes.
Okay. Tell us again his name and why you're calling him Swamiji.
Okay. His name is Paramahamsa Nityananda. Paramahamsa is his title and Nityananda is his name. He's an enlightened master from South India. He was born in a temple town and he grew up in the middle of all these sages. It's a place called Arunachala. If some of your audience has heard about Ramana Maharshi, he hails from there. That temple town boasts of an unbroken lineage of enlightened masters for the last 2000 years. So that place is a high energy place. Archaeologists consider the oldest rock and it's a Shiva's energy and a fire energy. And it's the middle of all these sages and rishis and all these people, monks. He was born there and he grew up there. And he experienced, he had the benefit of tutelage of some wonderful teachers from amongst these great people there. From very early age, he was trained to in his spiritual journey, physically and spiritually. So he had that benefit, and by the age of 12, he had the beautiful first experience of the consciousness. Then he started traveling by the age of 16, and at the age of 22, in year 2000, January 1st, he experienced consciousness and he realized his avataric mission, the mission for which he came down. So that's him. And then he started his mission traveling and healing people, and he came to the West, to the United States in 2003. He has started many centers and he has inspired many people. Many organizations are there. There's a worldwide organization. You can call it Nityananda Mission. It's spread over 100 countries. He has, over the time, spoken about 9,000 hours of recorded talks so far in last 10 years. And about 2,000 of them are on the web, on the YouTube. He's the most watched guru on the internet. And he very easy, lucid to understand. He speaks English nicely, appealing to everyone's request and everyone's interest. There is something in it for every one of us. And he has written over 200 books, which were published in 26 languages. So
okay, but now I'm still not clear on G. Where Swami G? Where does that come from?
So the G is a tag. You know about the word Swami. The G is a tag, which is respectful tag. So you know Bhakta Swami, right? My name is Bhakta Swami. So there are lots of Swamis amongst us. So we call Swami G to differentiate him as our leader, as a primal principle.
Okay. Now, 2012.
2012.
For those who missed the first hour, Bhaktaswami told us that what is happening is because of this cosmic alignment, which many many cultures are talking about, and even NASA talks about it. Because of this alignment, there will be a. This is my characterization, a sort of gulf in consciousness, in that some will cooperate with the raising of their consciousness and others will not, creating a separation actually between them and those who decide not to cooperate with the process of raising their consciousness. Will experience a whole lot of depression and craziness in the world. Those who cooperate with what's happening to the whole planet and raising their consciousness will experience a future that is, I believe your words were wonderful, a wonderful future. So let me pause and ask you, did I characterize that correctly? Did I describe that correctly?
Yes, but I would have to qualify saying that it is not going to be a disaster. There is a chance of going to be a disaster, but there is an opportunity for an uptick. So you were talking about Mahabharata, mm-hmm. the Vedic scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Just very briefly, I'll tell you about how scriptures are classified in Indian, the Vedic culture. There are four big volumes called the Vedas. They are the written down rules of doing traditional things and understanding and sciences, etc. Then there are meanings of that or the summaries of that called Upanishads. And then there are separate texts which qualify and which tell in the form of stories and life stories and examples, etc. Couple of them are Mahabharata and Ramayana. They are actually real life things which have been explained beautifully, poetically. The largest poem ever written.
Mm-hmm.
That is Mahabharata. And the essence of that is warfare. And the hero in that is Krishna, who tells the story to Arjuna as to what is truth, which is called Bhagavad Gita, means the song of the divine. And in that, what happens is, Krishna collects all the negativity in a controlled condition and destroys them. And the positivity survives. See, those were the days when the physical annihilation was required to conquer. Such is not the case now. So there is a huge opportunity for us. See, 5,000 years later, such consciousness is happening again. The cosmic confluence is happening for that uptick of the all alignment, which makes it possible for the same feeling, same experience. So now again, the same situation is happening. So now there is an opportunity for us to help the other people who are unable to experience the rise in consciousness and help them physically, medically, consciousnessly. So we have a responsibility. Those of us who understand, who look in, who look beyond the obvious, we have the responsibility to learn to meditate and help and heal these people. That is what the message of Swamiji is.
All right. You and I are going to continue our conversation, but at this point, I also want to invite our audience to join us to participate. If you have any questions whatsoever, don't be shy. I don't bite. Bhakta Swami, do you bite?
No, I love people.
Okay, I don't bite either.
I love people, but I don't eat them.
Well, the same with me. So the telephone number, folks, is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And then if you are outside of the USA or you're outside of Canada, and you don't want to make that international long-distance call, then what you can do that. It'll work. But you can use the flash message option on my website. Just go to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show. Right above that picture is a link that says flash message. If you are in the USA or Canada, don't waste your time with the flash message because we have telephones. So let's go to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Bhakta Swami, I have a question. I'm going to paraphrase this in terms that I understand.
Okay,
and
Brent,
going from what you said in the first hour. What is happening is that the alignment is, it's lessening the gravity, but the gravity is not affecting us physically so much as it is spiritually. Though, and those of us who decrease the amount of stress we have in our lives by not focusing on so many things at once have a greater opportunity of accepting this spiritual alignment. But those who want to bog themselves down mentally, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, have a lesser chance. So in other words, right now it is a battle for souls. Does that make sense?
Brent, actually, yes, it does. See, I tell you one thing. Not only in the governments or in the society, even in the inner world, capitalism works. That is the operative word. You cannot be passive and lazy and expect the benefits to befall. One has to be productive, contributing, plus take initiative to be actively promoting what is right and to be part of that. And only then you will accumulate and you will be able to attract the benefits. So one has to sit and meditate. One has to, one cannot say, okay, I am disadvantaged in the sense I am not conscious, I am aware, so what do I do? No, it is not allowed. You have to raise in consciousness. Take the breaks. Everybody who would like to, it's an individual decision, it's a conscious decision, it's a cognitive shift. You take the cognitive shift, you will see things around you which are able to help you. Help is always there. You just need to pick it up. I see so many times friends saying, oh, I suddenly see all these people meditating, people who come for the meditation. They say, oh, everybody is meditating, my uncle, my aunt, my friend, my brother, my boss. No, your perspective has changed. When you are hungry, you see the McDonald's tower. When you feel spiritually inclined, you will see the church. It's your perspective. As Kevin was saying in one of his shows, how you see makes your world. It's called, there's a beautiful phrase called Drishti Srishti. How you see from inside is what manifests outside. So if you change the cognitive, if you make the cognitive shift happen, you will see the help coming. So it's not like somebody is disadvantaged. It's about somebody is willing to take this step or not. So it's an open opportunity. It's a beautiful window of opportunity in existence. One more beautiful opportunity. Just like how Earth is balancing beautifully. 108 times the diameter from Moon, 108 times the diameter of Sun from the Sun. Just like that, this is a window of opportunity in existence. It'll come again 2,000 years later. It'll come again 5,000 years later, just like it happened in the past. But this is a beautiful chance for us to take a jump and experience deeper states of consciousness.
Okay, you know, I think I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to try and put terms that most Americans can make sense of. Those who have a more spiritual center to their daily lives, as opposed to a strictly physical one, will, how shall we say, take the high road.
There are simple things, Brent. Sparing a little time for meditation, sparing a little time for physical fitness in the form of Hatha Yoga, this changes the quality of your life immediately, immensely. And taking responsibility for preparing your body and mind to experience this conscious, this uptick that happens, automatically takes you to that level. Everybody can find time for gym. Everybody can find time for a little bit of peace, consciousness, and a little bit of introspection. I can tell you several things. You can go to our website. There are many things that you could pick up. The first thing I would suggest is innerawakening.org. That's a website you could go. You would see many attractive things, all the way from maybe a free class in the evening to a paid class in India, and anywhere in between. There are so many articles on the internet. There are meditation techniques available. And we have our centers all over the world. I'm sure there are many other organizations also offering. We have our center spread all over the globe under the banner of Life Bliss Foundation. You can go to any of those places and take help in the weekends and then do your own practice at home. There are many take-home techniques. There are many techniques available on the internet that can help you. Half an hour a day. Start with half an hour a day. Little bit of meditation. Little bit of yoga. It will help everyone.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Brent.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. 623-444-5889. 2012 is not going to wait for you folks. It's coming. Now, one of the things that you've heard me say so many times is the future is not out there somewhere. It's hitting you in the face every nanosecond. I'm going to snap my fingers, and pay attention to this, okay? When I snapped my fingers, that instant was the future one instant before. So the future is, we're living it now. We're doing the future right now. 2012 is approaching. And for many, 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 many of you, it is approaching in a way that is causing you great stress, great anxiety, great fear. Some of you have written to me and said, I'm flippant about it. And that's not the case. You know, the truth is that it's just as I say, if when 2012 arrives, pardon me, if when 2012 arrives, there's some kind of great earth-busting cataclysm, I'm going to find out about it at the exact same instant you do. I mean, we're all in this together. But the path that I've chosen is, since I can't stop it if that's what's going to happen, I don't know that it is going to happen, and I can't stop it if it is, I have to live every day. And so I've chosen to live as happy and worry-free and as productive as possible. And then, you know, if it happens, it happens. And we'll all find out together. I'm not flippant about it. Some of you think I am because of the fact that I said I'm going to have a party on December the 21st, 2012. And you think that's flippant. Some of you. Well, I don't think it is flippant. I think it's, you know, I'm going to celebrate living. And I bet I make it. But if I don't, then we can all talk about it in the next life. All right? But I'm betting I make it. And I'm betting that on December the 22nd, I go shopping. I could be wrong. But I am going to live free of worry and fear between now and then. And I would like for as many people as possible to join me in that. I think the world would be a much better place. If we're not flippant about it, we know it could happen. Maybe. But let's live and be productive, as Bhakta Swami was saying. Why is meditation so important? Bhakta Swami?
Thank you, Kevin. See, you have to calm down in two dimensions, at body level and at mind level. Meditation helps you to calm down and reduce those disturbances at the mind level. It does not make you mindless. It takes you beyond the mind. As I was explaining, mind becomes a tool for you that you could use. It'll take you to a state of conscious awareness, restful awareness, as opposed to what we have right now, restlessness. So that's one thing. The other part is the body. The body has to be prepared to experience this higher dimension. See, the human body is the most beautiful gift. As you were saying, Earth is the most beautiful space that we have, and we are fortunate to be on it right now. And it is true, according to the Vedas and according to the Vedic sciences, that astral travel and there's life beyond, and there is forms of life beyond everything. But human life is the most nearest to reaching the consciousness. The body, mind, and the soul are most easily compatible and integrated in this form and in this planet. So to take it to the next level of the consciousness rising, you have to keep the body and the mind fit and ready. So to keep the body and the mind fit, see, when you keep the mind fit, you will start experiencing peace and joy. When you keep the body fit, you will start experiencing great powers like levitation. There are these eight powers which may help you when you align yourself with this body, also with the higher consciousness, and get it prepared. You start feeling lighter, you start feeling larger, smaller, light. All of these eight things happen, among them being your ability to achieve your true nature, self-actualization, your ability to become one with everything, your ability to let your will happen, and perfect freedom from all of this. All of these things happen. So for that to happen, you can use what is called a little bit of meditation and a little bit of yoga. As I was telling, every day evening for us and morning for Swamiji, he conducts these classes in which he helps the people to raise their latent spiritual energy. You can attend the satsang on the internet from your very home. You can connect to the internet from your very home. It's called NTV. It's our web channel, website, nityananda.org. From there, you can connect to the website. And it's free. You can start experiencing this just from your home and help yourself to experience these beautiful gifts that are available, which are only available from a master. An enlightened master can take you into that state. So I would invite you, all of you, to go and see him, to experience his presence, and to experience the beautiful opportunities we have in this life. Like I said, it's a beautiful window of opportunity in existence, this one thing that happens once in 2,000 years. So this is the very time to experience his lightness and help ourselves get a jump to the higher consciousness. What do you say, Kevin?
Well, I was just thinking about the position that I think many, many Christians, Muslims, and Jews would take in thinking of an enlightened master. And I'm not, there's no way I can speak for them, but I can imagine, because I get a lot of email, I can imagine what they would say. And that is that from the Christian and perhaps Jewish and possibly the Muslim perspective, they would say that to believe that Swamiji is an ascended master is to follow a false prophet.
Okay.
So how do you deal with that?
I understand. See, Thomas Alva Edison discovered the light bulb, right?
Yes.
He's a Christian. Oh, sorry, maybe Jew. I don't know. But does it exclude the rest of us from enjoying the light bulb? It doesn't. Just like that, you don't have to follow Swamiji. You don't have to become his disciple. You don't have to believe he's a master. I believe it. You don't have to. All you have to do is see if something that he says is useful. If there's a book written, you read it. And if it is worth reading, you read more. Take a sample. So take a test drive from your own home on the internet at your own convenience. It's available. By the way, he's also speaking on the Alchemy event on 11-11-11 at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. He's a keynote speaker. And every day evening, he's available at 6:30 p.m. Take a shot. Look at it. If it is useful, which it is, you use it. You use it.
Okay. We have to step away for a break, and we shall return. Right after this, don't go away, folks.
In the United Kingdom, and you are listening to the fantastic Kevin Smith Show.
You are indeed listening to the Fantastic Kevin Smith Show, and this is the Fantastic Kevin Smith. And we are speaking also this evening to the Fantastic Bhakta Swami. And a couple of questions that I thought of during the break, and one of them harkens back to when we were talking about the, I think it's pronounced Mahabharata.
You're good, Kevin.
That's correct, huh? Okay, well, good. I'll tell you after I ask the question. When I ask the question, then I'll tell you why I ask this question. The technologies that are described in that epic, were they real? Did they exist at the time? Now, here's the reason I ask. Because you said that this window of opportunity that's opening for us has opened before. People had a chance to take a giant leap forward in consciousness. It will open again in the future, and they will have another opportunity. So if this scenario has played before, then is it possible, and is it the view of the Vedic culture, that those technologies actually existed and were in the hands of people who were not ready to take that great leap forward, and those technologies perished with them? Would that be correct? Is that the view, or is there another view?
Kevin, let's say 50, 60 years back, if someone told you about, you know, I can talk to Kevin from anywhere in the desert or in the Pacific or wherever I am, but I can speak to Kevin who is in some place in America, you wouldn't believe it, right? It doesn't make sense.
Right.
But today, it's common sense. Every child knows it.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is available. It's in our hands. So it becomes commonplace and everybody needs one. See, the Vedic culture technology was sound-based. The modern technology, the Western-based technology, is based on the light. Whether it is electronics or electricals or any of the things, it's based on the light particles or components thereof, the radio waves, etc., everything. But the Vedic culture was based off of the sound. And the Sanskrit language is phonetic. It's vibrational. So there are vibrations. There are 54 syllables, and each syllable has its own tone and tenor, and they have got male and female sounds. Totally, they become 108 again. So there is a science behind all of that. And each of them are scientifically provable. What Swamiji is doing now is bringing the beautiful thing. See, if I tell you, if you meditate, you will feel better, it may not be appealing. But if I tell you that you can solve your insomnia problem, then maybe it's interesting to a lot of your audience. That's what precisely he did 4 days back. He had two classes, 2 days in a row. He said, you do this, your insomnia is gone. And we have got many reports saying that yes. And he goes into scientific inquiry. One time when he was in US, there was a study done in Oklahoma University, studied his brain. They found that his metabolic, the brain metabolic rate is a hundredth, one hundredth of a normal human being. Then there's this flagship program we conduct in India in his presence in our main ashram. It's called the Inner Awakening, and you can go to the innerawakening.org to find out about it. And what was observed was, let me tell you a little bit. Every human cell in the body, about the 13 trillion cells, every cell has got mitochondria. Mitochondria is like the battery pack, and the doctors tell you that your aging process or your longevity and your disease resistance state of your health is determinable by its state of action, how well it is, how healthy it is. So its activity. So they have taken samples. An independent body has done a research on the participants, and they have studied that. On day one, they have taken samples of the blood samples. On the day 20, they have taken the samples. It's a three-week program. They found that the mitochondrial activity is phenomenally improved. Normally, the doctors or the medical or sports or any other entertainment improves by about 30-40%. Here, they have observed that it has increased from whatever level they were by 1300%. It has become 13 times, not 30%, but 1300%. So there's a phenomenal observation. I don't know what scientists are going to do finding out about what he has done. His touch, his presence has made a difference. Well, it's a technique, he says. He says, make a cognitive shift, sit in that place and meditate, and you will experience it. And it is given across the religions, across the caste, creed, and nature of people, among women and men, of all people of all parts of the globe. There are men from South Africa, there were men from Guadeloupe Islands, West Indian Islands, there were men and women from America, there were doctors, they were all experiencing this rise in mitochondria, which is a side effect of rise of consciousness. He's also doing research on Kundalini raising, on the consciousness raising, which has no mind effect. If you would like, I will explain that too.
Yes, go ahead.
See, what happens is when you open your eyes, see, in the brain waves, there are alpha, beta, gamma, theta rays. When you open your eyes, the beta rays are active, they're up and down. When you close your eyes, the beta rays are flat. When you open your eyes again, they're active. So he can give you an experience. You don't even have to see him. There are places in our centers or temples where you can come. He will see you and he will initiate you into that state where you can put those electro sensors and you can actually do this. This has already done across the world. They will put the sensors on you. You will see a flat of your beta rays even if you are levitating and jumping. You will be active, talking, open eyes, but your beta rays are flat. And even after you take away from that meditation, it doesn't wane away into action again. It slowly gets back. So he is making scientific inroads. He's open to scientific discoveries and inquiries and research so that people can benefit and get confidence in what he's saying. He knows it. He experienced it. And in fact, I have experienced many, many miraculous things. A lot of people have experienced many miraculous things. Healings. I am a healer. There are 6,000 healers offering to 26,000 patients every day across the globe. This is all happening. But if you want to experience it yourself, you come and learn what's called unclutching. This is a gift from the master, a technique for unclutching. There's a meditation technique for it. Come and experience it. And see, he's also showing it scientifically, how the brain waves are flattening out. That means you are at a state of restful awareness. You are working, walking, but you're not disturbed. And you are not hypnotized. You are talking. You can answer questions. You can do your all normal things. And at the same time, the beta rays are flat. Waves are flat. Showing that he is able to give you an experience of beyond the mind state. So these are some of the things that are happening, Kevin. I really invite everyone to take a look at that and see how it can help them. They can also experience. It is not exclusive to those who believe him as a guru or a master or as some enlightened master. You don't have to believe him. Why do you have to believe whether a mango is sweet or not? You just take a bite.
That's a good example. All right. So let's talk about the world beyond 2012. So 2012 comes. And let's say that your perspective and Swamiji's perspective on this is what plays out. We'll say that's what happens.
So
what's the world? What is the world going to be like then on the other side of 2012?
See, there are four cycles. There are four cycles, and then this is the final cycle where there's going to be beautiful time. It's going to be wonderful time on planet Earth. The consciousness is rising. See, it is not as if it's happening today or it will happen on that day. It has already started. The shift in consciousness is already on. There will be difficulties on the way. There will be ruptures, as we were talking about. There will be people with depression, those who are not able to be compatible. Well, some will lose out on the way. But upon the whole, there's a cleansing happening and there's a rise of consciousness and there will be beautiful time coming ahead, according to Swamiji. And according to what we are seeing around.
Okay, but what does that mean, a beautiful time? Give us some examples of what would that mean for us.
For example, there will be more stability. There will be economic stability. There will be growth in all aspects of productivity. There will be more fine arts and finer living. You see, we all know about fine cuisine and fine living, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something called fine living inside. People will start experiencing that. You don't have to be scared to go out in the middle of the night. You don't have to be scared about doing something. You are friendly with people. The apprehension reduces. You'll go back to say what life was in the beautiful Eden time. Things like that. So,
well, now those who have a grip on power in the world today.
Yes.
As this consciousness, as the level of consciousness is rising, their grip on people, their grip on power has to be slipping. And that would have to, I would think, be something that has them frightened and that would cause them to switch into a more aggressive mode in order to retain their power, their grip on power. So how does that play out? I mean...
Certainly, there'll be a period of adjustment, as you rightly pointed out. People will start feeling that people won't, that the masses won't feel their power. So, see, financial slavery is there in America right now. The children have to go through a huge debt during their college, and then after that, they will be paying for their mortgage for the house. And then they'll be living their lives paying for the mortgage, and at the end, they'll be living on welfare. This is not the best way to live. But there could be a higher consciousness level where everybody will be provided with the best of the things. It's not difficult at all. The path, everyday life, see, average a citizen in America goes through a dozen shocks, which are very dangerous and very bad for health. Every day, whether it is in the traffic or unknowingly or something happens, our everyday life is full of fear strokes, as they are called. They create a shake in your very being. These will reduce. You will start enjoying that finery in life in a different state, but only if you decide to do so. The thing is, it's available. There's a better ambience right now. It's even going to become better and better. But one has to take that conscious step. One has to do that cognitive shift. One has to go and take the step in terms of educating oneself. Maybe it can start with reading a book or watching the website or watching a video or anything like that. See, this, the coming to this show itself is a great start. You're starting to think about something more than an average Joe. You're starting to think what is beyond. You can think about what is inside. You are already in that positive step. So just take it on. Take it on that way. Help yourself by using the technology that's available in a way that is easy for you to learn and implement. So,
all right. We have to step away for a break. It's going to take over here in about 15 seconds. We're talking with Bhaktaswami and getting the Vedic culture view of 2012. One of the oldest, if not the oldest culture on the planet. And until tonight, I don't know of anybody that's examined this. We'll be back for our final approach right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. And we're talking this evening with Bhaktaswami. And Bhaktaswami, we have a caller on the line. Let's go ahead to the telephone. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Clay from Arkansas.
Yes, Clay.
On the news, I seen the Catholic Pope was sick, and, you know, according to Notre Dame, he's supposed to be the last Catholic Pope, and that could be a last thing for 2012.
Okay. I don't know if Bhaktaswami has a comment on that, but I want to give you the opportunity if you do, Bhaktaswami.
Well, I have another question. It's not important. I just thought I'd let your viewers take that in.
Okay.
But the other question is, what is that circle around your head when you meditate? I only reached it one time, and it was in like perfect harmony with the society and the universe. And I'll take your answer offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Clay, for that wonderful question. It's pointed out about Notre Dame. See, most civilizations, as Swamiji says, have been explaining this wonderful happening according to their ability to comprehend it. Depending on what kind of technology and understanding they had, they were able to explain and they interpreted in certain way. But the Vedic culture, let me explain, it's the oldest surviving culture. It's the oldest surviving culture, and the reason why it is surviving, Kevin, is because it has got a updation method. There are two parts in its scriptures. One is called Smriti, other is called Shruti. Shruti is what you hear, means it's been brought down by rote, and it's been brought down by the gurus and the disciples. And then Smriti is interpretation, updation. It's an open source code where there is a room for updation and adaptation, localization, and helping people to live it. That adaptation is what helped it to survive this long. Okay, although the technology has not been transferred, it does exist, and it doesn't mean it was not there. There are ample proofs which Swamiji is trying to bring through his scientific preparations. So that's why he's telling, if you could prepare your body also with you using yoga, which is a tool, which is another form of exercise, using breath, using awareness, and using your body, which is a great instrument, amazing instrument. You will not only feel the, you will not only experience the enlightenment, you will start experiencing extraordinary powers, including like levitation, which he teaches in his classes in the evening. So, these are some of the things which you can experience and as a proof and inspiration for you. Plus, it's going to be of direct benefit to your day-to-day living. So, well, coming back to Clay's question about Notre Dame, that has been how it has been interpreted. Yes, it is true, there's going to be end for lower consciousness. And yes, there will be a brilliant time ahead for the higher consciousness. According to the Vedic culture, it is divided into the four parts and it's a cycle. It starts all over again. So the best part is starting again. So in a way, the cycle has ended, meaning it starts again. So the end really is not an end, but a beginning. And it's, as I said before, it's a beautiful opportunity for higher consciousness. So Clay was explaining, there was a beautiful ring around his head at one point when he felt oneness with the whole world, the society, everything. That's a beautiful spiritual experience that Clay have had. I assure you, Clay, that it has been a spiritual experience for you, and a lot of people have experienced it. I have had my own share of bliss experiencing those with the teachings and guidance from Swamiji. I know thousands of people who have experienced that with Swamiji, and I know many masters have given such experiences. Now we have a living master, Nityananda. You can go to him every day evening at 6:30 p.m. California time, Pacific time, India time 7:30, nityananda.org, and he can give you that experience again. You can learn the meditation techniques and implement it. You can go to the websites and learn bite-sized meditation techniques to use them in your own life at your own pace.
What you told us is that these are important techniques and important things for people to be doing, especially because of 2012 and this galactic cosmic alignment that's taking place and the window of opportunity that it opens. So what you're saying is that because of all of that, this is especially more important.
Absolutely. This is, as you said, it's a beautiful opportunity. It comes after a long time, and you may have to take many lives to really get it back again. Once in a while, you have this rare opportunity. With the presence of a living master, it becomes much, much, much easier. I cannot tell you how much easier. So it's a piece of cake. And then again, I want to remind all the viewers impartially, There is no barrier of religion. There's no need to believe him as a prophet. You just make use of the fruits of the culture that are being handed over. Every culture has given its own contributions to the mankind. So the Vedic culture has its own contributions. So it's in a form that can be adopted and taken. It is not a breach of your religious conduct, or rather, a truly religious person goes back to the roots of the spirituality, which is peace, and the basis of the Vedic culture is loving, caring, sharing, giving, which is what we're talking about. And we talk about giving it, and we talk about sharing it, and we talk about caring for each other. And of course, love is the basis of all of this. So with that, I want to invite all of you to enjoy what the Master has to offer, what we have to offer as part of this whole blissful 2012 happening. It's a beautiful opportunity. Kevin?
So you have no, you have absolutely no apprehension or fear about 2012.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a beautiful time. It already is, as you said. Every nanosecond, it's opening up. And we are experiencing all of... See, I am a regular Joe. I was just a corporate guy. And look at me. I am a changed man. And I'm enjoying this. And I'm spreading this. A transformation in me, which many of my friends, relatives, and everybody is able to appreciate. And people are able to watch me grow from day to day. Last 7 years, too. This is a proof of a miracle. I am a miracle. My transformation is a miracle. And this can happen to you and every one of you.
And it's and as you said, you're not talking about something religious, are you?
See, religion is important. You follow your religion. A master is important. You follow your master. This master only rededicates your commitment to your master. Rededicates your faith to your religion. No need to change the religion. Just let's get excited about our own faith. Be religious. Experience the religiousness. Become the religion. Experience the spirituality ultimately. And let the consciousness take you higher.
All right. I want to thank you for being with us this evening. We're just about out of time. It's you get a chance, folks, if you like what you heard, if it disturbed you, but you want to know more. Either way, you have the chance to hear Bhaktaswami again at the Alchemy Event 2011 out in Los Angeles. Come on out, and you'll have the opportunity once again there. Also, you'll have the opportunity, if you want it, to meet me, and I want to meet you. I want to get your autograph. I want to get my picture taken with you, because I consider you the celebrities that make this show happen. Bhaktaswami, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as we bring this edition of the Kevin Smith Show in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to be it. That's a wrap for this evening. 2012 from the Vedic perspective. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.